This is a sicha which Reb Lichtenstein delivered. I don't remember right now when he delivered it, on Parshas Emor, and it's a shir that highlights three different factors of the way Reb Lichtenstein delivered these sichot, these shmuzin. Number one, very careful reading of words, very careful reading of different parshios. The yeshiva, the Gush Yeshiva, ultimately became revolutionary in its ability to restore large meta-analysis of Tanakh, large comparisons between large swaths of texts, svarim, prakim, parallel presentations in the Torah. And this was a rehabilitation of a type of learning that had been neglected for thousands of years, in general because Tanakh had been neglected, in particular because much of the way the medieval Parshanim read Tanakh was deconstructionist, extra words, extra letters, grammatical anomalies in the Pasuk. And this meta-analysis is something that has been very exciting to many, and many people associated with the yeshiva, with the Herzog Institute, Tanakh learning, Yaakov Maidan, the open known. Rav Lichtenstein rarely was involved in that type of reading, but the same structure of comparison was very important to him. But he would compare two words in the same Pasuk, or two words in parallel parshios, or compare general parshios, but not to the same structural deconstructionism, structural analysis that others had been involved in. And of course, additionally, he'd be very involved in classic parshanim, which very often don't get as much attention in the new style of learning Tanakh, of Ramban's and Ibn Ezra's and Sfarnos. So this is a case where Lichtenstein read a question by carefully comparing Parshas Kedoshim to Parshas Emor. He gave a sicha in Parshas Emor, and he employed Rashi, the Ramban, and Ibn Ezra to help develop some very, very powerful ideas. The second issue, which I think it highlights, is how Rav Lichtenstein was always distilling the interaction between Bein Adam L'Mako and Adam L'Chavero, but in a way which wasn't simplistic. I think very often we use those terms, and we just think in general about the hybrid fusion between the two. And Rav Aaron was giving us different layers and different ways in which immersion in the world of Bein Adam L'Mako may create apathy towards Bein Adam L'Chavero, different layers, different suggestions. It wasn't just a generalization that you have to excel in both areas, but it was a very, very careful, no surprise, a very careful scrutinizing of the different ways that the two systems interact and different types of potential dangers and risks that overemphasis of one could cause to the other. Then finally, which I'll describe in the end of the shir, the role of halacha and halachic man, to borrow the term of the Rav's Sefer, Rav Soloveitchik Sefer, how durable and sturdy halacha must be in defending or preventing ad-libbing and human freelancing when it comes to halachic behavior, or at least decision-making within the world of mitzvot, that halacha has to be the sole decisor. Anyway, so here's the shir, and I'll just try to highlight those three issues. Parshas Emor cites the Yom Tovim, a very famous section of the Parshas Emodos, which we read on Yom Tovim. But then in the middle, between Sefiras HaOmer, which is the tail end of Pesach, Usvartim Lechemim Acharas HaShabbos, and Shavuos, which of course follows from the Omer, and Rosh Hashanah, there's a list of mitzvahs of Matanos Aniyim, of Kutzuchem, Meskitzir Artzuchem, Lo Sichale, Peasotcha, Bekutzucha, Veleke Kitzurcha, Lo Selakeit, Lani Velager, Tazavos, Amini Hashem, Elokichem. So Rav Aaron was surprised, and he raised the questions, a dual question. Number one, why is the list repeated? After all, this list of Matanos Aniyim appeared in Parshas Kedoshim almost word for word in Perek Yutes. These specific matnos aniyim, leket, shichacha, peya. In Parshas Kedoshim, olelos and peret are raised, but again, there's no real difference by the absence of olelos and peret, because these are just analogous to leket and shichacha, more or less, when it comes to grapes. Second of all, why is the repetition embedded within the Parshas Emodos? So Rav Aaron quoted Rashi first, and Rashi quotes Chazal. And Chazal's general statement is, whoever is makbid, whoever is careful about leket, shechach, and peah, it is equivalent to ki'ilu bana beis hamikdash v'hikriv ba korbanos. In and of itself, it's a very, very deep Rashi. It talks about the fusion between beis hamikdash and morality, a fusion which is quite evident in many of the Nevi'im who railed against the hypocrisy of severing the two and hiding behind the ritual of korbanos and trying to mask moral dissolution and moral disintegration or deterioration. Lemeli Rosi Vechem Yemar Hashem, the beginning of Yeshaya. So it's absolutely crucial to the Beis HaMikdash, around which Moedim are centered, to have a backbone of moral integrity, moral probity. There's a Rashi in Meseches Megillah, which Rav Lichtenstein didn't quote, but I'll just add it, if I'm not mistaken, that there's a unique and special mitzvah on Yom Tov to deliver tzedakah. It's part of the mitzvah Simchas Yom Tov to create joy for others. The Rambam cites in Perek Yom Tov, Perek Vav, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the Rambam in front of me. And that's why we actually read this pasuk on Yom Tov, and it's not a diversion or a detour away from the halachas of Yom Tov, but describing tzedakah. Not just the general year-round mitzvah of charity, but a special mitzvah on Yom Tov, and this has become Baruch Hashem institutionalized in Kimcha Tepischa, Maos Chitim, on Pesach in particular. Of course, the Rabbanan added it on Purim, Matanos Levyonim. But that's Rashi's general description. Rashi doesn't really answer the duplication of why it's repeated in Parsha Zemar. Rashi is just quoting Chazal about the association and integration between Beis HaMikdash, upon which Yom Tovim are centered in Parshas Emor, and the mitzvah of Tzedakah. In any event, Rav Lichtenstein spent more time discussing the option of the Eben Ezra and the Ramban. The Eben Ezra has a very short piece in which he describes the duplication or repetition of mitzvahs of Tzedakah that occur during the time of harvest, the association and juxtaposition of those mitzvahs around the harvest time with the mitzvah of harvesting the Omer and ultimately sacrificing the Omer, the Minchas Omer, because the Minchas Omer, the mitzvah includes the Katsira, which is performed the night before. It's one of the unique qualities of the Korban HaOmer, that the Katsira, the preparation, is part of the actual mitzvah. So since the Katsira is so iconic, hence the Torah lists mitzvahs of Matanos Aniyim and Staka that attend during the moment of harvest. Rav Lichtenstein took this Eben Ezra and developed it very, very beautifully. And he felt that there are two dangers that could occur at the point of harvest that could cause a person or induce a person to forget tzedakah. The Eben Ezra doesn't really develop this. Rav Lichtenstein took the Eben Ezra's statement. I mean, there's an implicit question within the Eben Ezra. The Eben Ezra doesn't fully develop. Well, why would you want to associate the mitzvahs of tzedakah that occur during the moment of harvest with the actual description of harvesting the Omer surrounding Pesach and ultimately Sfiras Omer? Is it just stylistic? Is it just textual? While we're discussing the mitzvah of Katsiras Omer, the Torah wants to remind us that during the moment of Katsira there are mitzvahs of tzedakah. So Rav Aaron took this and developed it, that in theory, you could have two different people who ignore the mitzvah of tzedakah at the point of Katsira. They could be people who are selfish, people who are criminal, people who are insensitive, who just egocentric, self-indulgent, selfish, greedy, avaricious. And those are the people being described in Parshas Kedoshim, and those are the people against whom Parshas Kedoshim is defending. When Parshas Kedoshim writes, and here Rav Lichtenstein was very, very punctilious in the grammar of the word in Kedoshim, because there's really very little difference between the Pasuk in Kedoshim and the Pasuk in Emor. The one difference Rav Lichtenstein highlighted is that in Kedoshim, the Torah writes, Lo sichale pe'as sadcha likitzor. You shouldn't completely harvest your land. You should maintain pe'ah. You should leave a little in the corner for the aniyim. Likitzor. You shouldn't have this intention to be greedy and selfish and I want everything. And that would be, of course, reflective of a general greed against which the Torah is legislating in Kedoshim, because in Kedoshim you've got a very, very extensive list of other types of very, very immoral crimes, lying, cheating, withholding salaries, cursing those who are vulnerable, kalel cheresh, exploiting those who are blind metaphorically, evil latitim michshol, corrupting the din, latasa avava mishpat, spreading gossip, latelch rachel biamecha, hating others, latisa sechicha bilvabecha. So Kedoshim's entire ambience is describing, both at a personal level and at a collective and communal level, the dangers of wanton moral dissolution and moral chaos and lack of any sensitivity. Someone whose entire intention is, it's my field and I want to collect and harvest every single inch of this field and not leave anything for the aniyim. And that's the description of matnos aniyim surrounding the harvest in Kedoshim. Whereas the ambience of Emor is very different. It's not someone who is criminal and morally disregarding of any other limitations, constraints, or the needs of others, but it's someone who's just wrapped up in the mitzvah. Parshas Emor describes someone who's actually harvesting, as the Evan Ezra noted, harvesting the barley in order to prepare the great carbon of Minchas Omer, to launch Sviras Omer, to achieve the counting that will dictate and determine when Shavuos is, to allow people to eat the Chadash. So he's just wrapped up in religion. He's not morally monstrous or criminal. He's just so immersed in religion that he loses sight of others, and he loses sight of sensitivity towards others. He's a Yirei Shamayim, but his Yirei Shamayim has become so overwhelming, and his insatiable desire for ritual performance has become so preoccupied or so intoxicating that he can't consider the needs of other people. And there's a Hesach Hadas and an overfocus on ritual at the expense of Aniyim. So this is a very, very beautiful distinction which Rav Lichtenstein drew. And obviously, he would never think that we'd be guilty of the first. Obviously, we're far from the portrait of the wanton person in complete disregard of other people's needs in Kedoshim. And hopefully, our society is also very distant from that nadir, from that low point. But certainly, the danger illustrated in Parshas Emor is one which resonates very deeply with many of us because we become so enchanted legitimately and so attendant to quote-unquote Ketziras HaOmer, to mitzvos that are metaphorized by the Ketziras HaOmer, that sometimes we don't pay sufficient attention. And Parshas Emor repeats mitzvos of tzedakah specifically within the harvest, that specifically when we're involved in religious high moments, we're sensitive. I remember a very intriguing story, two similar stories. They're really very similar in their overall presentation. There's just slight difference of details that Rav Lichtenstein was famous for his very pitched and intense tefillas ne'ilah. And looking at him after Yom Kippur, in which he stood most of the day, if not all the day, I don't think he slept, he gave shiur all. I mean, it's just literally looking at an angel descending from Shemayim. People speak about the beautiful cherubic face that he had after Yom Kippur. In fact, for those of us who saw it, Ashrei Ein Rasa's us, it's always hard to navigate the post-Yom Kippur experience without it. I feel very empty sometimes post-Yom Kippur when I can't look at my Rebbe Reb Lichtenstein and get that confirmation and affirmation that my Yom Kippur was successful. It's really like almost a Kohen Gadol, that you're able to look at the Kohen Gadol and look at the Chut HaShani turning white and get that sense of confidence and almost guarantee. And we had that in Reb Lichtenstein. Of course, we're no longer Zocher to that. Anyway, there are two stories about Rav Lichtenstein during Tefillas Ne'ilah. One story goes that there was a boy walking around towards the end of Yom Kippur. It may have been Ne'ilah, may have been Mincha. And he was handing out the spices that many people have accustomed to smelling Yom Kippur to augment the brachos, to reach 100 brachos. And certainly this was not Rav Lichtenstein's view of Yom Kippur, just for artificial brachos and smelling spices and sweet-smelling materials. And at some point, Rav Lichtenstein just demurred and didn't accept the boy's offer. And evidently, again, I was not in Rav Lichtenstein's mind, obviously, at that point, but evidently, and I didn't see this story, but evidently, he felt that he had been so inconsiderate of this little boy, maybe it was a little child, that he ran through the base matters trying to find this boy to apologize to him, that the boy shouldn't think that his refusal to accept the spices was intended as a personal insult. And it really reflects the portrait that the Evan Ezra presents in Parshas Emor of being so engrossed in Ketziras HaOmer that you're insensitive, not because you're criminal or morally apathetic or morally unconcerned, but you're just so engrossed in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and being makriv HaKarbon that you ignore or sometimes by unintentionally, involuntarily cause injury or insult to others. Very similar story. This was told to me by Rabbi Chaim Lanner, who is now a teacher in Boca Raton, that when he was in yeshiva in 1995, evidently in yeshiva, as is the custom in many places in Israel, in order to facilitate Nisiyas Kapayim and Duchening during Yom Kippur before Shkia, so they hustle through Ne'ilah, and then they're left with about 20 minutes between the end of Ne'ilah, which occurs at around Shkia time, and Chatzos, and Tzeis HaKochav. Now, Tzeis HaKochav in Eretz Yisrael is much closer to Shkia than it is in Chutz La'aretz. So they have about 20, 25 minutes to navigate. So many places in Eretz Yisrael, and Yeshiva in particular, returns to the end of Musaf, and we recite Hayom again, and we sing some songs, and of course, which many people say Avita Bakenu, verse by verse. Anyway, so it was confusing to some of the Shanalef boys who hadn't yet seen it from Chutz La'aretz. So Rabbi Lanner at least related to me that he was fumfing around, as you'd say, looking through his machzor, trying to understand where the yeshiva had shifted all of a sudden from Tfilas Ne'ilah to some other part of the Machzor, which turned out to be Mosif. And Rav Lichtenstein noted this disorientation, and he helped Rabbi Lanner, who was then a student, he helped him find the place and adjust and join the Tzibor. So Rabbi Chaim Lanner told me this story, and to me it really resonated again that Rav Aaron was I can't imagine any person scaling heavens and immersing themselves in a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu like Rav Lichtenstein on Yom Kippur. I haven't seen anything even close to that in terms of religious pitch and religious intensity. But these two stories highlight what the Evan Ezra is describing, and Rav Aaron didn't just elucidate it from the Evan Ezra, but I think he lived that life and that example. The Ramban has a very, very different reason, explaining the insertion and the duplication of the mitzvahs of tzedakah surrounding the time of harvest into Parshas Emor. The Ramban doesn't describe the criminality which the Evan Ezra suggested in Parshas Kedoshim, nor the disregard and the forgetfulness and the lack of attentiveness which the Evan Ezra read into, or which Rav Aaron, based on the Evan Ezra, read into Parshas Emor. Again, I should say, I think I skipped this, and in Parshas Emor, the word liktsor is replaced by the word bikutzrecha. Those of you who are textually sensitive, in Parshas Kedoshim, lo sichale pe'asotcha liktsor, in Parshas Emor, lo sichale pe'asotcha bikutzrecha. So liktsor, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein felt, was someone who was just intentionally descending upon the field to ravish the field and plunder the entire field and not leave anything for the Aniyim. Whereas Bikutzrecha describes someone who's just involved in the mitzvah and is so engrossed in the mitzvah. Bikutzrecha, Ketziras Omer, he doesn't have enough religious resource or mindfulness to worry about those around him and the moral needs of those surrounding him. Anyway, getting back to the Ramban, Ramban describes something a little bit different. The worry of the Torah in Parshas Emor and the need for repeating the mitzvahs of tzedakah in Parshas Emor and the need for inserting these mitzvahs of tzedakah in Parshas Emor is not because of hesach hadas, that a person will be so engrossed in the mitzvah, but it's much more ideological, that a person will may claim, after all, I'm involved in such a great and mighty mitzvah of preparing Ketziras HaOmer. He knows there are aniyim around, but why should the small local needs of a particular ani override the national religious Beis Hamikdash glory? I mean, I'm involved in something great, and why should? It's not that he doesn't know the aniyim around. He's not attentive to those, as the Evan Ezra described, or as Rav Lichtenstein described within the Evan Ezra, Bikutzrecha, you're just so busy, you're aware of the aniyim, but you just make a calculated ideological decision. The needs of the many are greater than the needs of the few. The glory and majesty of Avod and the Beis HaMikdash justifies ignoring tzedakah at this point. If I want every single grain of barley for the karban, I don't want to leave over any of these grains for the aniyim. I'm just, at an ideological level, the value of this Beis HaMikdash centered mitzvah overrides and overtallies. As we would say, the mitzvah Beis HaMikdash is docha, the needs of the aniyim. And of course, this is the danger that the Torah is trying to prevent. Not the danger of hesach hadas, but the worrying for those who are weaker. Even though sometimes you may have to compromise on some of your mitzvahs, and this is, of course, became a hallmark statement of Rav Lichtenstein, that sometimes we have to be mekil in our own bin adam lamakom in order to excel at bin adam lachavero. And this is, again, not a question of attentiveness and mindfulness. It's more a question of calculation. As I said before, how are you starting to see some of the precision through which Rav Lichtenstein dealt with an issue that I think very often becomes very oversimplified? Bin adam lamakom, bin adam lachavero, the fusion, it just becomes very sloganized and very, very generalized. And Rav Aaron really helped us cut through some of the slogans and think very carefully about the way in which the two are meant to be fused and calibrated. So in that difference between the Evan Ezra and the Ramban is one such example. That one level of integration is to have attentiveness. Another level of integration is, well, when you calculate the needs against one another, the needs of aniyim have to be, or the proverbial aniyim, even people who aren't poor, but the needs of others around you sometimes justify and sometimes should mandate compromises in bin adam lamakom, obviously not in halachos, but in chumros and in hidurim and in minhagim. And Rav Aaron quoted a parallel case, and again, Rav Aaron was such a master of cross-system hekeshim, parallels between areas that you wouldn't think are similar, but all of a sudden, I think his view of Torah and his command of Torah was so robust and so, it's such a powerful command, like he was sitting on top of this mountain, looking down at the valley and looking at every detail, quickly creating associations because he saw it all and he saw it all complete. And he thought that the same issue was bubbling within, simmering within the danger of Es Shabsos Aitishmaru Mikdashi Tiro, that as Rashi constantly quotes, it's, and again it's in Parshas Kedoshim, that the Beis HaMikdash is in Dach HaShabbos. And here too, you could imagine people saying, it's the Beis HaMikdash, it's such a lofty and noble historic project. And on the one hand, they'd be so engrossed in building the Beis HaMikdash, they'll forget Shabbos, the Hesach Hadas, the forgetfulness of the Ibn Ezra. Or they can make an ideological decision that Beis HaMikdash is too important to delay and Shabbos has to be violated. I mean, there's an urban legend, so to speak, that the boys in Slobodka, which was a great yeshiva in Europe, felt that the Torah they were studying was so mighty and so important that they started to take notes on Shabbos. How could anything prevent the march of Torah? Obviously a very, very twisted and unacceptable position. But Rav Aaron saw within the interaction between Beis HaMikdash and Shabbos the same two dangers that the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban respectively sense in the interaction between Mikdash and Aniyim. And that was really the power of Hekesh and the power of cross-system analogy, the ability to create analogies in different areas of the system, either the halachic system when he delivered Lamda Shashirim or the system of thought when he delivered Machshava and Divrei Musar. And finally, Rav Aaron felt that in this Ramban was embedded another very, very subtle, but even in some ways more important concept, that it's not just ideologically that a person has to factor in the needs of others and not ideologically over-tally those needs because of the lofty project of building the Beis HaMikdash. It's also that you can't freelance and make personal decisions about what's more important. You have to follow the halachic parameters, and the halachic parameters here demand payah and demand. And those halachos are unchangeable and immutable, and you can't just introduce, well, this is such an important historical moment, we can curb halacha, we can, and certainly it's something which I think becomes a hallmark of Talmidim or of Lichtenstein, this strict, uncompromising, unyielding adherence to halacha as a cornerstone of our identity. And I think for Talmidim or of Lichtenstein, I think there's some people, and I'm not saying this in a chas v'shalom judgmental way, I think that halacha becomes not just the cornerstone, but the all-encompassing identity. It's all halacha, and there's no rishus, and halacha is really almost the only factor that's introduced into very delicate situations at a personal level, and certainly in Eretz Yisrael at a collective level. And I don't think Rav Lichtenstein reflects that. I think he was a man of many, many layers, and he encouraged us to process questions, decisions, dilemmas, experiences across many, many fronts, halachic, experiential, humanistic, universalistic, nationalistic, historical, and I think life in a national religious world demands a multi-layered response to very multi-layered issues. But that being said, halacha has to remain the one constant, the one anchor, and that's immutable, and the conversation can only begin if halachic needs are met. Halacha can't be ein etzav, ein chacham, ein ruach, ein neged Hashem. You can't compromise halacha. And I'll read it in Hebrew because I think, again, these are just summaries of articles of Shiurim he gave on Shabbos, right? No one took notes in Yeshiva Har Zion on Shabbos, but just to capture some of his language, or at least the language which the students heard, me'ever lakach in the Ramban, beyond the message of not overtelling human interests and human sensitivities because of ideologically lofty projects, yeshkan meser kali binyan kviyas seder adufiyot. There's a general message about setting priorities. You can't develop priorities based on your own intuition and your feelings. Only halacha can determine priorities. And what overtells what? Sometimes adam mitalein, person ignores drishot hilchatiot, halachic demands and mandates, mitoch nihira acharei arachim haniskavim beinav, because you're constantly running after other values that seem very noble. Mivater, you sometimes forfeit or reneg al pratim ktanim, on small details of halacha, letovat mashinere beinav, for the benefit of something which appears to you misimah chashuva v'na'ala, a lofty and great mission. HaTorah ba lishlol gishazu. The Torah wants to reject this. Hadam eino yachol latet tzionim lemitzvos. You can't rank mitzvos. V'rak kriterionim hilchatim. Only halachic criteria yikbu es sidrei hadifiyot shalanu. And then he repeats in the end, aleinu limana, we have to avoid mikviat seder difiyot, from establishing priorities midatenu, based on our own decisions, self-arbitration. What we think is important. For the lecha, and to follow rakach reharot halacha, follow the halach sanctions, again, I don't think it eliminates other factors, but it establishes halacha as the first criteria, the prioritization of halacha, and then, of course, other factors have to be considered. So it's really a very, very reflective, piece, which highlights, again, I think three aspects. Number one, Rav Lichtenstein seems careful. I mean, he basically was the Eben Ezra in this. He took the Eben Ezra as a very, very limited statement and developed it along Eben Ezra-type lines, distinguishing between Liktsar and Bikutzrecha, the engagement in the world of Parshanos, the Eben Ezra, the Ramban. Number two, his precision or precise analysis of the interplay between ritual and between Ben Adam L'Chavero, kindness, sensitivity. I gave a share about this last night. Maybe I'll include a link. Rav Aaron's very famous article, Goodness and Frumkeit. And then, of course, the immutability of halacha and the centrality of halacha in creating priorities and criteria for halachic decisions.